Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Selling Greenville, your favorite real estate podcast here in Greenville, South Carolina. I'm your host, as always, Stan McCune, realtor right here in Greenville, and you can find all of my contact information in the show notes if you need to reach out to me for any of your real estate needs. And please, if you like this content, please subscribe to it, physically like it, by hitting the like button if you can on whatever app you're using, or if you're on YouTube, leave a comment, like, you know, you could hit that thumbs up button. But really just make sure you subscribe, right? I ask you guys every single time, please make sure you do that. And that's the way you can guarantee that you won't miss future episodes. So please hit that little subscribe button and then we should be good to go. Okay. And then use me as your realtor. That's all I ask of you guys. I told you guys last week that I was going to be talking about my trip to Washington, D.C. So every year, the realtors from the National Association of Realtors from all over the country, we converge on Washington, D.C., usually in May. This year, it was in June. And basically, it's a way for us to go in into our nation's capital and kind of throw our weight around a little bit, right? Make sure that the government knows that we exist, because we don't have unions. We don't have representation outside of the National Association of Realtors. And every year things get done when we go to D.C. So last year, one of the biggest things that we had to tell our legislators all over the country was how VA loans were restrictive in terms of how VA buyers could compensate their buyer agents. And that was a big deal because the National Association of Realtors had just lost a lawsuit that had to do with buyer agent compensation. Well, immediately, literally the week after we went to D.C., the Veterans Association changed the rules to allow for VA buyers to compensate their buyer agents in a way that they had never been allowed to do that before, just to ensure that VA buyers were not at a disadvantage in comparison to other buyers. That was because we went there, we talked to our legislators, we told them this is an issue. They immediately coordinated with the VA and immediately did things in order to make sure that that did not become an issue, right? Because we want to make sure our vets have every possible opportunity that's out there to purchase a home. That's just one example. There are tons and tons of other examples that I could give, but this is why we go. And last year was my first time going. There had been a little bit of a hiatus after the pandemic, but it's really, really in full swing now and in 2025. So we had a great group, good group from Greenville, lots of receptions. We had reception for Greenville. We had reception for the region. We had a reception for the state. And then, you know, there are all sorts of other receptions and different things to attend depending on how involved you are in either the state association or the National Association of Realtors, et cetera, or whatever committee you might be a part of. For me, I'm only a part of a few committees, so it's not like an insanely busy time for me. But at the same time, there was plenty of stuff to do. I want to share all that with you guys. And at the end, I'm going to show you guys some slides that I think you'll really find informative that Lawrence Yoon, the chief economist for the National Association of Realtors, went over at the conference. So make sure you listen all the way to the end, or you watch all the way to the end. That'll be a good time to tune in on YouTube if you can. Okay, so I'm just going to tell you guys just a few things off the top of my head, right? One of the first things that was funny, honestly, was that Elon Musk was immediately the butt of jokes while we were down there. The whole feud between Elon and Trump actually went down while we were in D.C., so that was a lot of fun. I jokingly posted, which a couple of people didn't really understand, maybe more than just a couple, I don't know, but I jokingly posted that I was looking for Elon at the White House with a picture of myself at the White House. I wasn't looking for Elon. It was just a funny thing. I guess if you're really, really into Elon or really, really political and all of that, perhaps That wasn't a joke that made sense to you. Whatever. I thought it was funny. But Elon was the butt of jokes there amongst Republicans, amongst Democrats. There was just a lot of talk going on about that. So that's just an aside. One thing we heard, okay, and people, there had been some realtors that had been to DC a few weeks before this trip as a separate kind of greasing the wheels kind of thing, and they heard this as well. Politicians are talking about lower mortgage rates, and I don't know where they are coming up with this, because anyone that's following what's going on in mortgage rates knows that rates are not getting lower, okay? They've been in the high sixes, low sevens now for quite some time. They did go lower momentarily, very briefly, back around the elections, and then they just bounced back up. It's a little bit insulting to me when a person who represents me and who knows that I am a realtor tells me something like that, tells me that rates are lower when I work in this world and I know for a fact rates are not lower. You know, that would be like me telling that politician something about the way government works and it's way off. Now, they probably hear that a lot. They probably get that a lot, but they're not getting that from me. I'm not telling them that. So a little bit of a lack of self-awareness and obviously a lack of the market. In fact, one of them even said, I'm not going to name drop who it was, but one of them even said that they had just bought a house with a 5-year ARM. And this was after they said something to the effect that rates had gone down. Well, if rates had gone down, you wouldn't have had to buy your house with a 5-year ARM. Do you think about that? So talking out of both sides of your mouth. Classic politician talking. Now, had things been reversed, had former Vice President Harris won, and now we're talking to Republican legislators, they probably would have been focused on the higher rates, right? So they politicians know how to kind of spin things in a certain direction. That's why they're politicians, right? So politicians were talking about lower rates. On the flip side, the National Association of Realtors was talking about higher rates and higher for longer. That is the tone. It was a little bit of a somber tone when talking about mortgage rates, when talking about existing home sales, things like that. Definitely a somber tone. And that's to be expected, right? Because we were hoping, everyone thought, well, I shouldn't say everyone, but most experts thought that mortgage rates would be lower, that the housing market would be in better shape than it is right now. It just hasn't played out the way people predicted, and that's because it's been a very unpredictable year. Volatility, which there's been a lot of volatility, tariffs on, tariffs off, tariffs high, tariffs low, what's happening? Wars, no wars, nukes, no nukes, all these things, these are bad for mortgage rates, believe it or not, because it influences bond markets, which then influence mortgage rates, among other things. So long story short, hearing different things from the experts at the National Association of Realtors than we're hearing from our politicians. So that's not good. So hopefully this past week helped the week that we were there helped to educate these politicians, these legislators on the reality of the situation. Now, there's not much they can do. Because even if, and I'm recording this, Federal Reserve just announced they are not lowering rates, but it really doesn't matter because right now what's driving rates is the bond market, as I already said, and treasury bills. Even if the Fed were to lower rates, I don't know that that would really influence the markets that much. So here we are. There's not a whole lot that our legislators and in the state of South Carolina or elsewhere can do about rates, but I would wish that they wouldn't gaslight us and tell us the people that are living in this world and breathing and drinking and eating mortgage rates every single day, tell us that they're lower when they really are. Now, if you're wondering, you're probably not wondering. Maybe some of you are. I don't know. Two things that I didn't hear discussed, that was a little bit surprising, was A, privatizing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. I didn't hear much about that. That is one of the most under-the-radar things that the Trump administration really wants to get done. that could really have a huge effect on the housing market. That could make mortgage rates go up even more, potentially. Now, this is where our legislature could be involved, right? And making sure if Fannie and Freddie do go back to a completely private market, the U.S. government gets completely out of that, that they do something to ensure that mortgage rates don't go up by half a point to a point, which is what I've heard some experts say they think would happen if they went back to being fully privatized. So that was not discussed. I wish it was, but I didn't. Again, it could have been discussed behind closed doors. I didn't hear it in the meetings that I was in. The other one, this came out right after we were done, was a lot of headlines about Trump wanting to eliminate FEMA, the flood disaster and emergency disaster management agency. And I can tell you right now, the National Association of Realtors would be very much against that, right? And I have mixed feelings on eliminating FEMA. On the one hand, I'm not a big fan of situations where we have to have the government insuring people's homes and all of that. What ends up happening is, you know, you get Florida, which has a tremendous percentage of their population on the coast. You get Texas, California, a tremendous percentage of all of their populations living on the coast, or living in these areas that are likely to flood. They are taking a lot more of that money than South Carolinians are, for instance. So I have mixed feelings on that. Okay. But I can assure you the National Association of Realtors doesn't have mixed feelings on it. They would be against eliminating FEMA because that just puts a lot of people that have homes in flood zones into a really difficult situation. What would they do, right? Would they just be uninsured? Would there be a private option that would be a lot more expensive for flood insurance? I don't know. But again, those headlines came out after we left. We did not discuss those things. So TBD on that. Away from the political side of things and more about the real estate side of things, because it was a conference too. It wasn't just meeting with politicians. We had an actual conference here in DC. And we talked about what I mentioned to you guys a few months ago, this new delayed marketing exempt listing option. Now, if you missed before, you forgot, from my episode I did a few months ago, the National Association of Realtors just dropped on all the local associations a few months ago that they are allowing a third way, essentially, to list a home, right? Currently, there's two ways to list a home. You can list on the multiple listing service, and it goes out to all the websites like Zillow and whatnot. Now, technically, you can put it in the multiple listing service and say, I don't want it to go out to those websites. You can technically do that. There is an option for that. At least in Greenville, there is. But I'll come back to that here in a second. The other option is office exclusive or brokerage exclusive. If it's brokerage exclusive, then it doesn't go into the multiple listing service. It just stays within the brokerage. Okay, so this is, you know, let's say that you've got a $5 million house. You don't want it to go in the multiple listing service. You want to try to market it to just the exclusive agents. Maybe, you know, for instance, my company, we have a lot of agents that specialize in luxury housing. You might say, well, let's try to market it to them for a week first, try to get an agent that's actually experienced in this sort of housing before we put it on the internet and people can see, you know, everything is inside of the house. That's the other option. The third option that the NAR unveiled recently and then said local associations have to figure out how to implement it is delayed marketing exempt. What delayed marketing exempt means is it goes into multiple listing service but doesn't get syndicated out to websites like Zillow, Realtor.com, Homes.com, et cetera, et cetera, for a certain period of time. The period of time to be determined by the local associations. Where I'm going with all of this is I knew that this would be a talking point at this conference. Sure enough, it was. And a lot of associations are very upset about this. I don't know. Well, I do know why they're upset. I think it's silly that they're upset. They're just emotional. I think the reason why they're upset is they feel like the National Association of Realtors keeps dumping stuff on our plates without any warning. And at the end of the day, this provision, this delayed marketing exempt listing provision, was most likely put into place in order to pacify a few brokerages. But it upset, they upset a whole lot of association directors. I personally think the more options are good. More options are better than fewer, right? If you're selling a house. But a lot of people weren't happy about that. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that shakes out here in the upstate and nationwide. It's going to be another one of these things where depending on where you live, it's going to be a very radical different option that you have in terms of listing your home. And I talk about this all the time, that real estate is hyper-local. It changes dramatically if you're in Tucson, if you're in Boise, if you're in Austin, if you're in San Francisco, if you're in Greenville, if you're in wherever. Very, very different depending on where you are. This is just going to be one more of those things. Another anecdotal thing here, I feel like the vibes were kind of weird at this conference, and that's not super shocking, but it wasn't a lot of like bad vibes. It was just like weird vibes, like people saying, you know, my business is doing okay, but it's just different than it's ever been before. Like there's just things happening that just aren't normal in comparison to what my business has been like for the past 20 years. And so that was helpful for me to hear, because I feel that myself. My business is that way. There's just weird things. Not bad things, just weird things. And you're hearing that all over the country. Another one, and this will be the last one before I get into the slides here, is at this conference, one of the things that did directly change was the National Association of Realtors decided to change the hate speech aspect of the Code of Ethics. The way I understand it, that, you know, it used to be that the hate speech rules for the Code of Ethics applied all the time for a realtor, right? I could engage in hate speech that would basically infringe on the Realtor Code of Ethics no matter where I was. I could be in my bedroom having a conversation with my best friend on the phone, and he could hear me say something that sounds like hate speech and then report me to an association that to say that, you know, I violated the Code of Ethics. This actually happened not that long ago, something shockingly similar to this, a few years ago, and if I remember correctly, I think it was in South Carolina, that someone in a private Bible study, it came up sexual ethics, which just about every religion has rules for sexual ethics. That's not unusual. But someone in that private Bible study did not think that that was appropriate for a realtor to discuss and reported that realtor. Now, the realtor ended up not getting in trouble, but had to go to meetings, had to testify before an organization, a whole lot of stuff. And at the end of the day, the reason why they did not get in trouble wasn't because it was determined that the Code of Ethics didn't apply in that private Bible study. Actually, it was determined that they didn't get in trouble only because they said there are different interpretations, and this is one interpretation, but there are other potentially valid interpretations. Well, that's a really, when you're talking about a person's religion, that's, people should have the ability to say, this is what I believe, without having to hedge it with, but also there's these other beliefs and they all might be valid and nobody knows. Like, that's ridiculous. So I think if I understand this correctly, that would no longer apply. That what would apply is if then my belief on sexual ethics told me that people with a different sexual ethic than me can't be my client or can't buy a house from one of my listings or something like that. Now it's infringing on my job. That's a real thing, okay? But a person's religious beliefs, person's private conversations about what they think politically on some of these different things, that should not constitute hate speech. And ultimately, what you end up doing, and you know, to go back to the example I just gave, that example pitted two protected classes, right? Religions and people, religious people are a protected class, and so are people based on their sexual identity, orientation, etc. That's a protected class as well, where you're pitting them against each other, because some religions teach that some of these sexual identities, orientations, etc. are wrong, okay? And so to say that this religious group can't say that is actually infringing on their rights and their protected status. So it was all kind of a house of cards anyway. I feel like the NAR did the right decision, made the right decision, listening to their membership about that. And that's just my personal opinion. I'm not speaking for anyone else on that, to be clear. So I just want to make sure we're on the same page there. All right, let's get into the slides from Dr. Yoon from the meeting, or from the conference. This is the Real Estate and Economic Outlook. I'm not looking at all the slides. We're going to go through, I think, 9 slides here. So first off, I pared down the ones that I thought you guys would be interested in, or the ones that I'm interested in, at least. First off, the spread between the 30-year mortgage and the 10-year treasury yield, okay? I'm going to explain this very briefly in case you have no idea what's happening here. If you go right now and you look at the 10-year treasury yield, it's going to give you a number. I don't know what that number is while you're listening to this. Go check it out. Go look at it. Now go to Mortgage News Daily and look on Mortgage News Daily what the average 30-year fixed rate mortgage is on there. I'm just going to throw out a couple of numbers. Let's say that the 10-year treasury is at 4% and the 30-year fixed rate mortgage is at 7%. That would be essentially a 3%, or more technically, a 300 basis points spread between the two of them, okay? That's what this chart here is showing. And for those that are listening that aren't watching, basically we are in the 250 basis point spread. So essentially, if the 10-year treasury is at 4.5%, mortgage rates are going to be at 7%. And that's pretty much what we're seeing. Let me look right now. Right now, as I'm recording this, the 10-year treasury is at 4.391. The 30-year fixed rate mortgage is at 6.87 per Mortgage News Daily. So that is basically exactly a 250 basis point spread. You can basically take, subtract one from the other, you come up with about 2.5. Historically speaking, that is high. Going all the way back to the year 2000, that is historically very high. We're near some of the peak levels that we've had for this spread. And that's a direct result of market volatility. A very, very simplistic way of thinking about it. What would it normally be? It would normally be about, you know, 1.5 to 2, 150 to 200 basis points. So mortgage rates are higher now, not just because of what the Fed's done, not just because of the bond market, but also the spread is causing mortgage rates to be higher. If that spread even went down just a little bit, we'd see a lot of mortgage relief. But I think for that to happen, we need the economy. We need there to be less volatility and more confidence in the direction of our economy, which currently there's not a lot of that. There are a lot of great slides that showed basically the map of the U.S. and different things happening in the U.S., and I saved pretty much all of those for this episode. And so here's one that shows jobs gained since pre-COVID record high payroll employment. So this is the percent change from March 2020 to April 2025. Job gains, okay? South Carolina is one of the highest on here with a 10.1% job gains increase from March 2020 to April 2025. There's only, let's see here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Only 6 other states did better than South Carolina in this regard. North Carolina was at 10.3. Kind of surprising that North Carolina was up there. Also, Florida in the Southeast was up there. The Southeast had very, very good representation on job gains. And then if you look at job gains over 1 year, from April 2024 to April 2025, South Carolina also doing really, really well. South Carolina, on this one, as I'm eyeballing it real quick, to make sure that what I had looked at before is still accurate, number 2 for the past year. Number 2 only to Idaho. 2.4% job gains over the past year. That's great. That's by far the best in the Southeast. Number 2 in the country. All right, moving right along here. Recent monthly existing home sales show no recovery. So here is the, this slide shows the seasonally adjusted annualized rate of existing home sales. And this is a really, really important chart to understand what's happening right now, right? Because if you look at a lot of the home sale data, it looks like it's not that bad. But a lot of home sale data includes new construction. And so people that are buying new construction are usually not buying existing homes. So if you're a seller, right? If you're listening to this and you're someone who's thinking about selling your home, you're not selling new construction. You're selling a home that you live in. Of course, if you're a builder, you are selling new construction. So perhaps you'd be interested from that standpoint. But long story short, existing home sales, right? Not new construction. Everything else is bottom of the barrel. Hovering around 4 million seasonally adjusted annualized sales, which is recession level. Okay? Recession level. In fact, if you take out recessions, it's essentially not been this low since 1996. And really, this to me is the most important thing in order, thing to wrap your head around in order to understand the state of the housing market right now. This is why the housing market feels so bad if you're a seller, because people are still buying new construction. Now, new construction is not doing as well as it was, but they're still buying new construction. What they're not buying nearly as much of historically is existing homes, okay? And what's astonishing about this current sales being comparable to 1996 is the population is so much higher than it was in 1996. So the demand is there. There's so much more demand. But unfortunately, you know, this is an unprecedented situation here. I wish I saw some people, you know, when Israel started attacking Iran, I heard people say, I just wish we lived in precedented times. And I get that. I do too. I wish we lived in precedented times. We don't, though. It is not ours to decide whether the times we live in are precedented or unprecedented. Month supply of inventory. Okay, here we're going to actually look at new homes versus existing homes. And interestingly, the month supply of new homes, which is in the red if you're looking on here, is actually pretty high. So new construction, historically speaking, is typically between 4 to 6 months of inventory, which is normal, right? Builders, they don't want to go above 6 months of active inventory because that's typically when it becomes a buyer's market. So they, you know, once they get to that point, typically they start dialing back new construction. Well, right now, it's bouncing around 9 months of new construction inventory. And I just talked to an agent that worked for a builder today who was talking about a community that he's been told, hey, we need to sell some homes in this community because they've not sold a single one. Brand new community with spec homes. They've not sold a single one, and they're starting to freak out. So very interesting. And existing homes is much lower, but is on the trend up. Existing homes, close to 4 months of inventory. That would still be, by historical standards, considered a seller's market. But it is on the trajectory going back up. Let's look at median home price, new versus existing. Since while we're on this topic of you know, the dynamic of how new construction, existing home sales, interplay. And this is very interesting too. We have a convergence, okay? Not surprisingly, new home sales and existing home sales tend to be different in many ways, but one of those is that new construction tends to be more expensive than resales, than existing homes. That is no longer the case. In fact, for the first time ever on this chart, it flipped that existing home sales, the most recent month that they had this data, existing home sales were more expensive than new construction. That's another reason why existing home sales are down in comparison to new construction, because why on earth would you buy a used home for more than the cost of a new home? Now, I can think of some reasons, right? A lot of the you know, depending on how old the home is, when it was built, where it was built, an existing home might have better quality construction than a new home, but most people aren't super worried about that. They're more focused on the finishes, and they would just rather have the new construction. So this is insane. Again, unprecedented. We've never seen this. This chart goes all the way back to year 2000. We've never had this reversal. And what do you do with that, right? What do you do? There's nothing. There's nothing you could do. Now, home builders are going to have to make some calculated decisions here. They're going to have to decide, do they keep building or do they put the pause on it in order to prevent prices from continuing to go down as their inventory takes off? Because they're sitting at 9 months of inventory. They get to 12 months of inventory. That's going to be like really, really bad, right? It hit 12 months of inventory during the global financial crisis. They don't want that to happen. And it doesn't look like it's going to do that. That's not the current trajectory, at least not for a long time. But they have to make some decisions here. So this will be an interesting one to track. Going back to the maps, okay? Here's another map that shows the five-year home price gains since pre-COVID. So this is, you know, basically appreciation, right? How much appreciation have we had? And again, South Carolina, one of the highest numbers on this map, 68.4% increase in price gains, or 68.4% increase in home prices since the first quarter of 2020. That is one of the highest on here. The highest is, interestingly, 75%, which is in Maine. But most of them, that was the only one in the 70% range. Most of the highest on here are in the 60% range. By the way, Louisiana. Everything I keep seeing about Louisiana is bad. Louisiana is the lowest on here. Louisiana had some bad numbers on some of the other things that we showed. Really sad. I think, you know, the hurricanes and things like that have really battered that state. A lot of this data keeps looking bad for Louisiana. Now, they did the same thing with this chart, or with this map, as we did with the other one, where they tracked the one-year home price gains from first quarter of 24, first quarter of 25. South Carolina had 6% increase in home prices over the past year. That's kind of middle of the road for the past year, okay? There's a lot of sixes, there's a few sevens, And so the past year hasn't been as hot for South Carolina. Not surprising, right? We've been talking about that. Puerto Rico, I don't know what's going on over there. Puerto Rico is 11.6%. What was Puerto Rico on here? Whoa, Puerto Rico was, I misread it for a second. I thought it was much higher. Puerto Rico on the 5 year curve was 53%. So yeah, crazy. Last year in Puerto Rico, prices went up 11.6%. Love to know what's going on there. I do not know. I don't do real estate in Puerto Rico. Last slide here, nationwide forecast. So here is the official National Association of Realtors forecast for 2025 and 2026. They expect existing home sales to be up 6% this year and to be up 11% next year. So they expect that existing home sales are going to go on the right trajectory, but then really start to take off next year. On the flip side, they think that'll be reversed for new home sales. It'll be 10% increase this year, 5% increase next year. Okay. So that'll be interesting to see. Okay. Are we starting to get to the end of the empire that new home sales have had since 2021? NAR seems to think that's the case. We'll see. Median home price, they expect a 3% increase in 25 and a 4% increase next year. Moderate. Okay. Moderate. Again, this is nationwide, not South Carolina or Greenville specific. They expect mortgage rates. I assume this is not an average. I assume that this is how the year ends. So they expect mortgage rates to end 25 at 6.4% and end 26 at 6.1%. That's a disappointing number for 26, but I think it's realistic. I think it's very possible that 26 mortgage rates end at 6.1%. Job gains, they expect 1.6 million in 2025, which is not super great. But 2.4 million in job gains in 2026. That would be much better. That would be a, you know, generally speaking, a healthy economy. So there's some data from NAR that I hope you guys find interesting. It was a great conference. If you're a realtor listening and you've never been, it's called Realtor Legislative Meetings. I'm happy to tell you about it. So please reach out to me. Let me know. But I highly recommend going. You can stay as long as you want. Right? It's about a week, not quite a week. But a lot of people just pop in for 1, 2, 3 days, then head out. I stayed a little bit longer because I took my family with me. We did a little bit of sightseeing. My kids had never been to DC, so that was fun. We did not go to the parade, as I already said. That was, we missed that one, which may or may not have been a good thing. I don't know. But good time, very helpful, beneficial week. And I hope that data was helpful for you guys. So my contact information is in the show notes. Like I said, if you want to talk to me about that, if you want to talk about what the Realtor Political Action Committee is doing, how we're involved in advocacy, let me know. If you're needing a realtor, more importantly, because that's how I get paid. That's why I do the show. Please reach out to me with that contact info in the show notes. Please like, rate, review, subscribe to the show. And we'll talk again next time.